Thank you. My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me here tonight, and thanks to the guys that rode up here with me. Gentlemen, thank you. My sobriety date is January 20th of 2000. My home group is the Outlaw Safe Cracker Group in Richmond, and we meet on Mondays and Thursdays at 8 o'clock. And so if you're in town, come on by and see us. We would love to see you there. Some of you have come down and talked, so thank you for making the journey. I have a sponsor, and spoke with them today, and I'm also a sponsor and a sponsor of their Men and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I know for a fact that those are the things. Having a home group, well, having a sobriety date helps. That's good for somebody like me. Got that. Having a sponsor, being a sponsor, having a home group, and having a a job in that home group. And these commitments are the things that is the reason why I'm standing here, and I'm not drunk, you know. Because without that stuff, I probably would start thinking I was different, you know. I'd probably start thinking that maybe I don't really have this. I'm sure. Often enough, I'd start thinking I'm different from people anyway, you know. So, but those things pull me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they consistently have done that since I've gotten here. So, my work sent me down. I'll tell you the story to start off with. My work sent me down to Alabama a couple years ago. It's nice to have a job. Anyway, it was good that they trusted me to go someplace, too. That's something kind of amazing. They said they sent me down there, and I was driving around, and we were talking a little bit about irritability. Somebody brought that up in the car. And nobody probably can identify with being irritable or resentful. They sent me down to Alabama. I'm driving around trying to find a meeting because I'm just upset beyond belief. And I get to this, I finally driving around through the woods down there, and I'm in Tuscaloosa or something, and I couldn't find the AA meeting to save my life. And I see this orange glow off into the woods, and I'm thinking, I don't know what that is, but I was kind of drawn to it. So I go down this little dirt road, I pull it up, and lo and behold, it's a circle and a triangle with a neon sign inside of a building. I've never seen anything like this, you know, in my life. I'm thinking, wow, that's, you know, they put a little, they know exactly what's going on here. So I pull in there, get in the meeting just in time. And it was the funniest thing. It was a lot like the first AA meeting I ever went to. It was a smoking meeting, you know, and you don't see too many of those anymore. And I was just kind of feeling right at home. That just was great. Everybody was really friendly, laughing, talking. And it's a round robin discussion kind of thing. So everybody gets to talk and gets around to me. And I made a comment about the sign. Everybody just started laughing, you know, the sign. And they said, yeah, the chairperson spoke up. He said, yeah, we figured if that sign was blinking, it would have been promotion rather than attraction. So I was just like, it was a good feeling, you know, especially when you're somebody like me who's upset easily or irritated easily or resentful for extended amounts of time. I'm talking about anywhere between 5 and 10 years about something. You know, you can go to a place, an AA meeting, you know, and you can feel at home, you know, and that's what happens to me. I think that's what happens to us when we come here. Maybe that's why we all come back. You know, I think from the first meeting on, I felt at home. I've been lying and just, you know, trying to get right with drinking for so long and just trying to make it work for so long that, and it just didn't work for so long. When I finally got to an AA meeting, I just felt like for the first time in my life, I was doing the right thing. You know, all the prejudice that I may have come in here with, a lot of it, at least right off the bat, just kind of fell to the side as a gift because I brought a lot of it in here. And so when I come to AA meetings, it's awesome because I feel at home. I feel at home here with you. You know, it's a good deal. I know without a doubt this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's been that way ever since, especially when working with others, you know. I know it's what a bigger thing is supposed to be for me. And it keeps me alive, you know. So I'm going to tell you what drinking does for me, really. That's a good way to start this thing off. Did a lot. I mean, I tell you, it worked real well for a long time. I mean, I'm not knocking drinking. I think it was awesome, you know. It was great until it didn't work, you know. It wasn't so much of a Big Bang Theory for me when I took my first drink, but in my early teens, I certainly, you know, felt included with everyone else. And I, you know, it's the thing that brought me, I think, closer to you and my peers around me. And I was in, you know, 7th or 8th grade, and I'd just been warned about it and all that kind of thing. I just did not, that didn't stop me. That wasn't a sufficient thing to keep me away from it. I've always had a tough time is getting along with people, it seemed like, when I was a kid. And I just, you know, when the opportunity came to be a part of what was going on, I took it. And I think that just naturally what happened to me, it just set the whole, you know, thing in motion. And I don't really think it was a real big deal when I got drunk the first time, but I tell you what, it was started a partnership for sure. And it wasn't, you know, long after that I just was a daily drinker, you know. By the time I graduated high school, I was drinking pretty regularly at that point. And in my early 20s, probably from 20 years on until I came into AA, I was definitely a daily blackout drunk. And, you know, that just didn't seem like a big problem or a big deal to me. You know, the payoff was working. Alcohol fixes something in my mind. It adjusts the way I see my circumstances. It just does. It always fixes it. I mean, the walls could be coming down, you know. And if I got enough Budweiser and Jack Daniels, man, you know, I could put a twist on it. The bills could be stacked as high as this big book, and I could, you know, get a couple drinks, and I've got a plan on how to get those taken care of. You know, it never works out. But the only thing that needs to work out is making sure I got enough to drink the next day to come up with another plan. You know, and that cycle just would go on. And on and on and on and on. It went on for years. And but it fixes something. And it's the magic of alcohol for me. And come to find out, I guess probably my mid-20s, people started coming and talking to me about drinking a little bit. And that's always a tough one. You know, I'm very protective of it. So when somebody wants to talk to me about drinking, it's just the weirdest feeling. Because you know what they're going to... You know they're going to come to you and try to get you to stop or moderate or something. I don't know. Somebody's always got some smart aleck thing to say about you drinking. I just was like, my whole theory on that was just none of your business, you know. You know, whether you were a relative or a, you know, girlfriend or best friend or, you know, employer, it didn't matter. You know, I guarded alcohol. I wasn't the guy that was going around saying, hey, I'm an alcoholic. That's why I went to bed last night. You know, I mean, it wasn't my thing. I always protected it, and I just did that in a lot of ways, and just shutting up about it, changing friends was a good one. You know, I had a lot of home groups back then, man. All the bars I was going to, those were certainly my home groups back then. And I was just, you know, I'd switch a bar, I'd switch towns, you know, I'd switch whatever I had to. But I always try to keep myself distant from people that were getting in the way of drinking. People, whatever, anything that got in the way. And it was just the most important thing for me, you know. Of course, I'm going to protect the thing that works all the time. So I was living in Richmond. I just gotten back from a trip to California, and I was 20, 21 years old. I borrowed a whole bunch of money, went to school maybe 50% of the time, and just drank up a whole bunch of student loans, and I started a bunch of one-year stays, you know, just moving from apartment to apartment. With friends of mine, and you know, so living with somebody like me, this is what it looks like. You know, I'm the guy that if you've got stuff and I need it, I'm going to take it. You know, if something happens in the house and something gets broken, I'm lying about it. You know, and if you've got booze or money and I need it, I'm going to take that as well. And so I say 1 year stays because people could only tolerate this, you know, for a short period of time, and I'd find somebody maybe who didn't know me too well, you know, and put on a good face or a good show for them, move in, and this cycle would start, you know. And that's kind of how I was living. And an interesting thing started happening with alcohol. You know, these, you know, people were coming to me talking about it, and started thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll just take a little break for a little while, you know, so I could maybe stop, you know, maybe 2-3 days. One time I stopped for 5 days, believe it or not. I know that's a long time. It's ridiculous to go 5 days without a drink. 3 days is about all I could take, because about 3 days it really starts coming out of your system. For me at least, and I start scratching a little bit, and I'm shaking a lot, and I'm hearing things, and I'm seeing things, and I didn't really understand all that. I know what that's all about now. About 5 days of not drinking, you know, things start to calm down a little bit, and then once that physical thing kind of passes a little bit, the mental thing comes in for me. And all of a sudden, everything that has caused me, you know, all the trouble I have caused as a result of my drinking, none of it seems to hold any weight anymore, you know, and it just seems like it's a good idea to start drinking again. And that's just what happened, you know, all the time. And I wasn't stopping all the time, but, you know, I'd come home at like 5 or 6 in the morning from the after-hours bar. I'd sleep it off. I'd go to work around 4:30. You know, and I'd make some, about 7 o'clock, my hand would be shaking so hard I'd have to serve. I was always working in restaurants and bars. I'd have to serve drinks with the other hand because they'd be slopping the martinis all over the place. You know, and then I'd make some promises to myself that, you know, hey, maybe tonight I'm just going to go home and I'm going to take it easy. You know, I'm going to go home and take it light tonight. So, that would consist of stopping off and, you know, at first it started off as stopping off and maybe just getting a six-pack, and then that wasn't quite doing it because I'd always find myself in a bar after drinking the six-pack. So I'd try another experiment. Maybe I have a six-pack of tall boys, that might work. You know, it's a little bit more. It's not quite a 12-pack. You know, it's a respectable amount of beer. It looks cool drinking a tall boy, too. I don't know. I like it. And then that wasn't working. So, I would start picking up a 12-pack. And then, you know, that wouldn't be working. And I'd find myself back at the bar again. Every promise or attempt to try to moderate or control or, I don't know, redirect the outcome of my drinking failed. And you could have told me that that's what was going on. I mean, you could have laid it all out. You could have written it all out, you know, in the best way for me to understand. And I just wouldn't have been able to see it or, you know, admit to it or anything. You know, anything else going on in my life, you could lay out if there's a problem. And I probably could get clear on it in some respects. Maybe not anything, but, you know, if my car was broken, you know, and I kept trying to do the same thing over and over again, maybe I might listen to you. You know, it's just a car. You're probably right. Let's get that fixed. Let's get it tuned up. But when it comes to drinking, I don't have that ability. It's not inside. It's not within me to be truthful about it. I can't see the truth, and I couldn't then at all. You know, and I just kept on my course. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm never going to quit drinking. I remember saying it to myself. I'm ever going to quit drinking. This is just too good. You know, as I'm throwing the beer can in the street. You know, and I just lived in this circle, you know, for a long period of time. And I discovered drinking alone. I discovered drinking in the morning. I discovered drinking alone in the morning in the woods, you know. It's a good place for somebody like me. There's not much I can break out there, you know. I was wet in the bed on a daily basis for almost a decade, and I got comfortable with that. I'm just okay with that, you know. I was going to the pawn shop, readily handling, you know, handing over anything of value to, you know, to get money, you know. I was just compromising anything that was good that was given to me. I mean, my mom is a great woman. You know, she comes from a strong, principled Norwegian background, you know. But got some drunks in our family, too. So, but I was given a lot of really good tools, you know, from her for living, about what to do and how to be polite and honest and all that stuff. And all I just cashed all this stuff in. I wasn't able to do that. You know, when my primary purpose is to get a drink, all else goes to the wayside. And so that's what was going on. And so I just was kind of, I was robbed spiritually. You know, I just was, you know, I was sinking a little farther down. And so, I don't know, really, it's not really much trick to it. You know, I just drank myself to a place where finally it just didn't even work anymore. I went to this wedding, and a good friend of mine from high school was getting married. You know, and I'd been playing in bands with him forever, and I'd known him since we were just as long as I can remember. You know, and I knew this day that I was supposed to be sober. I mean, I just knew that this was the day that I was supposed to get up, just get in the car, and go. Kind of like we do here in AA. Just get up, get in the car, you know, and go to this wedding and not drink. And I was unable to do it. You know, I just could not take a drink that day. And I started in the morning. I tried to moderate it, manage it. I'd long since, you know, stopped eating any kind of regular food at that point. You know, I'm just when I drink, I just, all I want to do, I just don't even eat, you know. And, you know, needless to say, around 1 or 2 in the afternoon, the booze was just kind of pouring out of me. And finally, marriage, the day everybody gets married, long Catholic wedding in the middle of July. God, it was hot. I mean, it was ridiculous. I'm sweating profusely. You know, people are looking at me funny, you know. And all my friends, everybody I'd ever known in my life that knew me at any depth was at this wedding, it seemed like. And by the end of this thing, I mean, I just, you know, I was really just trying not to cause a scene. And there was this girl there, you know, his sister, and I was just nuts over her. And she was there with some guy. And from what I understand, and what apparently I knocked over the bride's, you know, grandmother or something. And I felt like I caused a scene. And I mean, I just couldn't stop drinking scotch. I don't even like scotch, man. I was just a scotch connoisseur that day. You know, I'm at the bar. Weddings are not good for people like us. I mean, this is open bar, you know. There's just too much responsibility involved in that. And so I'm out there, and I'm just plugging away. And it's just a big mess. And it's significant, I think, in the respect that I woke up the next day, and I don't know, I just had never quite felt like anybody ever really knew about my drinking, which, you know, everybody always knows. I just didn't really realize, and for the first time, I felt like the secret was out. You know, how could I hide from this any longer, you know? And for the next week, it was just odd. I couldn't seem to get drunk. I got intervened on by my mom. She came up, man, knocked on the door, brought all the AA literature, dumped it off at my apartment. You know, we had a heated battle about my drinking. And by the time I got up the next day, I didn't drink that day, the next day. I mean, by the time she left my apartment, I mumbled something to her about not, you know, I promised her I wouldn't hurt her anymore, you know. I don't think I'd really ever seen at any depth at all that my drinking was affecting anybody. I was always like, it's just none of your business, you know, like I said earlier. You know, it's my drinking's my business, you know. You don't like it, you know, lump it, you know. It's just none of your business. And so, I don't know, something changed. I was cornered. You know, our book talks about it. Maybe it's a jumping off place, you know. I'm always trying to figure out what happens, you know, at that point where you... I mean, I was just committed to drinking. I just did not want to stop. And all of a sudden, I have a desire to stop. What is that, you know? It must be God. I don't know what else it could be. It must be something else that gave me a desire. I've drank myself into a position of just being miserable. And maybe I just had a chance at that point. I had a desire. I mean, I don't know. I see a lot of people come with a desire, and maybe it doesn't last. You know, I don't know what's up with that. I mean, it just came. And at that point, and wasn't like I just stopped drinking, you know, but at least seemed like it was born that day. And for like the next 9 months, I tried Eric's program of recovery. I mean, I didn't pull any books. It wasn't like I pulled out the book and caught a sponsor. But I just was, something had moved in me, you know, at that point. And in my mind, I considered what it would be like to not drink anymore. I was terrified of sobriety. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to do anything sober. Especially go out on a date, you know, or anything. I think the whole dating thing was what was hanging me up. I mean, I'm like, how am I ever going to be comfortable doing anything, you know? I was just terrified of what that looked like. And so, for like the next 6 to 9 months, I was doing some other stuff, and I continued to do that. But I started drinking non-alcoholic beer just kind of take the edge off because I was thirsty, man. God, it was rough, you know. I was spending more money on sharps than anything. I mean, I never spent so much money on anything in my life. That stuff is spendy. So, anyway, I didn't know I was still drinking. You know, I didn't really understand the alcohol, you know, that I was allergic to alcohol or anything. I just knew that it was working, you know, to some extent. So I'm drinking like 20 sharps a day, you know, and I'm just constantly in the bathroom, you know, all day long, in the bathroom with sharps. And I just was kind of going nuts, you know, and I got really uncomfortable at one point because there was this girl had come into the picture, and I was maybe 4 months into this little recovery program of mine, and I met this girl, and I hadn't seen a woman in a long time, man, because, you know, I was in rough shape, man. I was like about 125 pounds, you know, nice grayish color. At points I'm not kind of a gray in this room, but anyway. Gray like the water fountain, you know. I was smoking about 3 packs of Marlboro Reds a day, and, you know, I hadn't eaten any regular diet in such a long time, and this kind of wears on the body, you know, and that stuff kind of started getting some color back to me, and all of a sudden, you know, this girl comes out of nowhere, and I'm like in love in a day, and, you know, she had a real problem with me doing some of the things I was doing, so I stopped those things, but, you know, I kept strong on the sharps, man, steady head, Captain, and so... But after like a couple weeks when that whole thing just kind of fell apart, you know, I just started getting nervous. And I just was like, oh, I got no more of this crutch over here. I still got the sharps. I'm just started freaking out, and I just was opposed to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I just was like, all I got to do to stop drinking is put down my foot. You know, I've made a decision. You know, I want to stop drinking. If I want to stop, I will stop. And I was under that presumption for all my life, you know, up to that point, and well into sobriety, which is dangerous. We'll get to that in a second. But I started getting nervous, and all of a sudden it seemed like a good idea to go to an AA meeting. And that just popped into my head like somebody slapped me, you know. And so I called Intergroup and went to an AA meeting the day after Christmas in 99, and I felt right at home. You know, the fear and the anxiety that I was having and the loneliness that I was having at that point, I think that's really what drove me in here, because I was still working in a bar at that point, you know, and I'm a complete connoisseur of every type of non-alcoholic beer you can find, man. You know, O'Doul's Amber, Excalibur. I'm like, you know, trying to change it up, trying to get it right, you know, and I'm sitting at the bar drinking non-alcoholic beer, trying to feel cool, and it's just not working. And, you know, I came to an AA meeting, and it all just, I just felt comfortable here. And it was just, I mean, that's not many people's experience, but that was mine. And I just felt like for the first time I was on the right track. And so, after about a month of coming to AA meetings, you know, another thing happened. You know, I talked to some guy in the meeting about, you know, my sharps habit. He just kind of like shaking his head, kind of like, oh, geez, you know. And, you know, he said that he suggested I might want to stop drinking if I was going to get sober. So, that's what you taught me here, you know, that I needed to stop drinking to get sober. And so, I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, but I'm not getting drunk. And I kept arguing with him. And he kept telling me about the hand and the hot stove thing. He kept putting his hand out, simulating the hot stove and the whole thing about being powerless and you can't do that. And I was like, this guy's crazy. I'm going to stay away from him. And so about a month of coming to meetings, you know, I just got really uncomfortable. You know, drinking just got really uncomfortable. And it just stopped. I mean, I wasn't praying. I didn't have a sponsor or home group. I didn't want to read anything, do anything. But I was going to meetings every day, and nobody else seemed to be as obsessed about this as I was, you know. And I really wanted to fit in here because I was drawn to you, you know. I was drawn to all these smoking old people who were laughing and having a good time sitting down at 210 North Madison Street. And they were free. And I just had never seen that before. God, I mean, it just brings a tear to my eye, you know? I mean, it really does. I had never seen that, you know? And there's no way they could all be lying about it. And it was just a really clear display of people, you know, being released from care, boredom, and worry. And I brought a lot of it in here, you know? I think we all do. And it's a tough spot to be in, you know. It's a hopeless condition, you know, for somebody like me. I'm a real alcoholic, man. And I kept coming to that clubhouse, you know, and those guys just, you know, they just were showing me what to do by what they were doing. And they were just really kind, you know. And so a day at a time, I kept coming, you know, and it was almost like after a couple months, they were like kind of kicking me out of the nest. They're like, there are other meetings you can go to. They're like kind of shoved the bird out of the nest, you know. I was like, I don't want to go anywhere else. I feel safe here, you know. And so I eventually started. I was going to a lot of noon meetings. I was still working in this bar. I mean, I didn't know. It's the only profession I could handle, you know. I wasn't drinking, you know, and it was fine, you know. And I started going to some other noon meetings around. I kind of just started doing that. I would go to work at 4:00. And I got a sponsor, you know, and he told me, he said, look, the whole thing with your job is just make sure that you, when you're off work, go home. Don't stay there. Because I always would, you know, if you're working in the restaurant business, you just kind of, you work, and you just get off work, and then you just go to the bar, and you spend all your money, and whatever. You know, try to, you know, fall in love, and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, he's like, leave the bar, you know, when you get home, get on your knees, pray. Thank God for keeping you sober. When you get up in the morning, I want you to get on your knees. I want you to pray and ask God to keep you sober. I want you to call me every day. I want you to get a home group. get a job, make sure you get a job in that home group. And so I started doing all these things. And because he asked me right off the get-go if I'd follow his instructions. You know, I don't know why I said yes. I just did. I mean, I believed him. You know, I mean, he seemed like he knew what the heck was going on, you know, and he did. I mean, he knew exactly what to do with somebody like me. I was coming out of the frame. I was just like a ping pong ball coming out every direction. You know, I just was falling in love with every girl I saw and upset with every other person that I saw, and it's just my emotions were just like a roller coaster all the time, you know. I'd leave a meeting feeling so good I'd want to get drunk. I was like, it's not supposed to feel this way, right? I just never felt so free, you know, and whenever I felt really good about something, this is why I would just go get drunk. Or if I felt really bad, I'd get drunk too. I mean, it doesn't really matter. And so all this was kind of going on, and it's just the first few months was just ridiculous, you know. I mean, it's absolutely, anything is par for the course in your first 9 days of sobriety, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I was so mad one day, I just completely destroyed a dresser with a ball pin hammer. I mean, for no apparent reason, just I couldn't figure out what to do with resentment at that point. You know, and I just destroyed this thing, and I realized that it wasn't my dresser to destroy, so I glued it all back together, you know, and so, sorry, here's your dresser, you know. But I had no idea. I didn't know what to do, and I'd always been perplexed by what to do with anger, you know, and all that kind of, I don't know, what are you supposed to do with anger? You know, it's your fault. How do I fix it? How do I fix you? I'm always pointing the finger at people, my whole life. And fortunately, my sponsor started taking me through our steps here, and over the next probably 9 months, you know, we went through the steps, and I had this home group, and I was opening up the church, and I was making some coffee, and I was shaking some hands, and I was calling 4 people a day, and all these little tiny actions that he was telling me to do, none of them really made any sense to me, but I just kept saying yes, and I did them, and, you know, the cloud started to lift, and the resentment started to pass a little bit, and the inventory, I think at that point, was just as best as it could be. You know, I was nuts at 3 months, wrote out this inventory. It's more like, I hate you, and this is why I hate you, you know, and I was like, this is my 4-step, you know, and, you know, it was what it was, but it was enough, apparently, to stay sober, and over the next couple years, you know, it just kind of started another cycle, kind of existence, you know, and I was feeling a lot of release from alcohol, the obsession to drink, you know, I was talking earlier in the meeting how the obsession to drink left pretty early on. It just got plucked at some point, save for a few brief moments, as it talks about in the book. I mean, I couldn't figure out, like, I'm sitting here working in this bar, I'm watching all these people do all the stuff I used to do, and it wasn't creeping up on me, you know. It wasn't like a tractor beam, you know. I mean, it's what it is. You see a 7-Eleven, you just about wreck the car to try to get into the parking lot of the 7-Eleven. That wasn't happening anymore, you know. Something was stepping in between me and a drink. I mean, what's up with that? You know, the thing that I didn't want to stop doing, you know, I knew what it was causing problems. I knew, but the knowledge wasn't enough. And here I am, I'm coming to some meetings, I'm doing these actions that some old guy is telling me to do, you know, and I'm like, what's up with this? Why is this working? And I don't know. Still don't really know why. I mean, why has not really got me anywhere today. I mean, this is what works. You know, it's not really that important. But I understand, too, it's a power that's bigger than Eric. You know, over a period of about 4 years, I finally caught alcoholism. And that might sound funny, but I was really confused over that period of time about who was keeping who sober. After a while, I started feeling kind of powerful. I'm like, yeah, I'm the one that's coming to meetings. I'm slapping myself on the back every time things are going well, and, you know, shooting God the bird every time things are going bad. It's a tough way to have a relationship with somebody. If I did that with any one of you, you know, we would have a situation, probably. You just don't do that with people, you know, and I wasn't practicing much trust or any kind of thing, I don't think, with, you know, with this power that's working for me. Or maybe me working for this power, I don't know. But I was confused, and I got to another place, you know, where it was just, I was willing, at 4 years sober, I've never felt that bad drinking at 4 years sober. I felt worse than any day drunk I'd ever been through. It was just ridiculous. I was in my kitchen, sitting on a cooler, rocking back and forth, crying. sad. But that's what untreated alcoholism looks like for me, you know, when I've given myself all the credit. I'm not practicing anything different with, you know, people in my life, and I was just still a tornado. And so I finally got broken down without a drink, and you know, I've seen that happen to friends of mine and people I've sponsored, and a lot of people do get drunk, or maybe they kill themselves. You know, I've been to quite a few AA funerals. I haven't even been here that long. And, I feel lucky because I ran into somebody who had experience with the solution that's in this book, you know, and everything changed. Man, I mean, I didn't know what I had, you know. I was confused about what it was about, powerlessness over alcohol, you know. I was, the only person that was powerful was Eric. I was still playing God all over the place, you know, and the inventory I'd taken was kind of ridiculous, and it was just kind of a mess, you know. So I started following the directions. It's like I'd never even seen the words in this book. And this person sat down and it took me through page by page. And when it said to write, we wrote. It said pray, we prayed. And, you know, we just followed the directions. And I had a whole new experience. And everything changed. I mean, I just was a different person in a matter of a couple months. And it hasn't been the same since. I mean, it just, everything has been better. And since that time, you know, there hasn't been a time when I haven't been trying to give it away to somebody because I was told that you got to give it away to keep it, you know, and it certainly has been my experience. There have been times when I don't give it away and I get a different result than when I try to give it away, you know, and I don't know. I needed to understand that I no longer had the choice to drink or not. If I had the choice to drink, why am I not out there choosing to drink or not drink, you know? I haven't been given any power. I have an option to seek a power here that can solve my problem. That's the option that I can choose to do. You know, I had to be willing. I didn't believe in God at that point. I was angry, but I was at least willing to believe. That's all I needed. I made another decision. Took an inventory that was more honest than anything I'd looked at before. I shared it with this person. They shared a lot of stuff with me that was all the same stuff. I had a pretty clear idea of all the defects and the different things. The similar things to everybody else. It was very clear what I had been doing. It became very clear very quickly how I had been causing trouble with everybody in my life. It was just like a brick hit me in the head, you know. No longer could I hang in my hat on being a victim. I couldn't really point at you anymore and be like, yeah, it's your fault, you know. I found out I was setting the ball rolling with everything. And a whole bunch of another round of amends to make with people, all people in AA that I just was acting like a jerk to. And I finally started practicing a way of life in 10, 11, and 12. And I hadn't been doing that for 4 years. And they weren't kidding about 10, 11, and 12. I'm here to report. They're serious about that. And it's been AA's experience. I just kind of kicked it to the side and like, I got this, you know. I got a girlfriend. I got a job. Everything's good, you know. And I just got sicker and sicker and sicker. And I just, my first sponsor, you know, it wasn't like he didn't tell me any of this stuff, you know. He said, Eric, it's the people that don't admit that they're wrong are the ones that stay sick. And he told me that when I was 4 months sober, as he stood next to me and supervised me apologizing to somebody that I did not want to apologize to, you know. So, but I needed to. And, you know, he said, it doesn't even matter if you're wrong or not. You just need to apologize, you know. You just need to be wrong and get used to it, you know. I've heard a lot of people talk about that, man. And it's so much better to be wrong today. I'm not talking about whether or not I enjoy it, as it's irrelevant. It really is irrelevant, you know. But it enables me to keep breathing, a sober breath, I believe, you know. And so it's good. It's good. It's okay to be wrong. And so little by little, you know, things would pop up and was starting to admit things along the way like we're supposed to do. And I started practicing the inventory in the 11th step with another person. And answering these questions on a daily basis, and that just changed everything. It brought a whole new level of accountability, you know, because a lot of times, I mean, you know, I go to bed and just kind of sleep off whatever, you know, trouble I've caused that day. I chased a guy out of the store one time, chased him down to Radio Shack, told him exactly what I thought about him, you know. This is like 6 years sober. It didn't look too good, right? You know, I'm like feeling all powerful and realize, you know, wait a minute, I think I might have overstepped some boundaries here, you know. And I could clean that up, you know. And it's amazing what can happen, you know. And it just, But those are the types of things that my ego will get going and I just start causing a lot of trouble. And anyway, everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous has spent a lot of time with me. You know, all the sponsors I've had, my sponsor today, you know. And people just spend time and they give through spending time with you. And so that's what I think that means the most about the, you know, about working with others, is just spending time with people. You know, people that you sponsor. And that is the single time I know that there's nothing else going on that I'm supposed to be doing, you know. I mean, I might be sitting there thinking about myself the whole time, but, you know, at least I'm in position to try to be helpful, you know. And I know it's what I'm supposed to be doing, and it's changed my life, you know. There isn't a time that something happens when you're sitting down with another drunk and I just see something a little differently, you know. It just is what it is. I started going out to Alaska in 2003 because I just wanted to feel powerful. I wanted to go out there and catch big fish and run a marathon and just, I think I was just trying to get over this girl. It was really, so I felt like I had to go 3,500 miles away, you know, that would fix it. A little geographical, you know, type of thing. So I went out there, you know, trying to do that. And I started going crazy on my vacation. And I fortunately had plotted out a course of meetings. And I started going to some meetings out there. And I met a bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous in Anchorage. And my life took another turn, you know, and changed everything. You know, I saw a fellowship out there that I had never seen before. I saw a unity and a release from, I don't know, it's like I constantly seem to run into people that look like they're doing better than how I feel. So I'm like, what are you doing? You know, it's no big secret. You know, these people were working all three sides of the triangle, you know. They had unity in their home group, you know. They were all sponsored and experiencing recovery through the steps. And they were being serviced to other alcoholics, you know, either in treatment centers or through sponsorship or making coffee or whatever. And they were together. And they were working on three sides of this thing. And it shows. You just can't argue with happy. You know, and I hadn't seen that before. You know, I mean, it's not that, I don't know, I don't know, something was different about this. And so I came back to Richmond and I was sponsoring a couple guys at the time. And, you know, I was all just like, you're not going to believe this. Oh. So I kept, every year I go back out there, and about a week and a couple days I'm going to be back out there again. I've been gone, I go every year. I haven't missed a year. And but what happened was is that we kind of adopted their format of their meeting, and that's our home group now. You know, and so we have that same format. And it's a structured meeting like this home group is, you know, and we love it. You know, we suit up, we show up, and we take that seriously, and we try to put our best foot forward, and we're happy. You know, we're serious, but we're having fun. And it's good, you know, and people do what they do in your group here. I love it. You know, people stay seated, you know. They're respectful. We get here on time, you know, and we try to be of service to those that need it. And it just changed everything. And we go out after the meeting, and we have a good time, you know, at Ariana's Pizza Joint. We do it twice a week, you know, and we drag new people in. You know, we pull them right into the middle of the herd. We do, and we talk about this herd that we have here. Well, that's what you did to me. You know, you didn't leave me hanging off the edge for very long. Andrew pulled me in and saved my life. You know, this guy, I mean, were people that normally would not mix. You know, and this is guy's monstrous guy, man, and just kind of pulls me in the side. I'm a couple days sober, and he's telling me, if you need anything at all, you pull me aside, and I'll help you. And I mean, that's what happens here. And that's what happened to me. So, I mean, I just think it's important. You know, it's not what I think. It's just what people have done. You know, couldn't have told you or testified that that was important at that time. But I see it happen, you know, in AA meetings. And you just grab those people and you pull them in. And, a fellowship grows. And that's what happens. And it's what's happened at our group. And it's fun. It's a good time. And, I don't know. I mean, it really has become the bright spot, you know, as it talks about. And we're just not willful. You know, we got people that are greeting and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know, we like it. But it's important. And I have to have that, I have to have some accountability. I found the things about Alcoholics Anonymous commitments are the things that keep me sober in AA. I mean, there's plenty of outside things and stuff that come up along the way, you know, that pull my attention away. But I've had to have these commitments here, you know, and that's what saves my life. You know, my commitment to my home group or committed meetings or whatever it is. You know, and I don't know. I don't know what to say as far as God is concerned. I mean, there's been more trust that things are going to work out okay than there ever was before. And I don't have any lengthy, wordy description, but I tell you that what my first sponsor told me has really worked. You know, he said, you know, just keep praying in the morning and praying at night and showing up. Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. You know, 97% of the things you worry about, Eric, never happen. It's like, Basil, this is a 3% situation. You know, frantic, you know. All these things, you know, people would tell me to do, you know, and little by little, this trust is in place, you know, and it just is there, you know, and it's just funny. I don't know how else to describe it. Anyway, I'm going to stop there. I just want to say thanks a lot for having me come up to talk tonight.